wasn't about me. Well, okay, if your son hadn't been a great hero, which he was, re-enlisted, gotten a Bronze Star, died in a mission he didn't have to go on, but he wanted to go save his buddies. I mean, he's a total hero. Okay, if that hadn't happened, if she didn't have a son, no one would care what she has to say about this war. So you can't just then, you know, chastely stand back and say, oh, this isn't about me. No, you're using your son to project your anti-war views onto the country, which no one would be listening to, other than who your son is. And the things she has said are outrageous. I mean, like I say, this is an odd way of grieving. But I got to say, I can't get enough of Cindy.
And let us not forget.
I wish she had her own show.
Let's not forget that her entire family has denounced her. Her family.
Yeah.
Has denounced her for what she's doing.
Raggedy family denounce him for lying. Would the colon cancer Powell's family denounce him? Or what about Condoleezza Rice? When will her family denounce her for the lie that she projected? How about Armstrong Williams and other jigaboos who backed up this empire's invasion into Iraq? What about Cheney, who lied his way into this nonsense? Talking about if it wasn't for her little G.I. Joe son, no one would care about her views. So, in other words, you have to have a sucker die for empire before your views are considered worthwhile. So the reality is that the U.S. is getting its ass whipped, and now you're having breaks and cracks within the empire, within the corporate media structure, and within the regular population. That doesn't really base its morality on justice, facts, truth, or anything else. It's based off the American way. That's the problem. You know what time it is. Slave time. Check it. Listening to 103.3, 101.1 with Skidmark in Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, 107.5 North Carolina, LUVER.com, the world, RadioForAll.net, the universe, and click in, Slave Revolt web at Slave Revolt Radio on your Google, find out what time it is. Tonight, in the same mode as last week, and following in the Black August tradition, we're going to hear another roar from a black cat on the subject of empire. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 103.3 Slave Revolt.
That they would be with that change will only come through struggle. And, of course, as I pointed out in our recapitulation, we don't want war, but it's necessary for us to wipe war out with strong tactics. We're prepared to do this.
Only depends upon who controls the projection. If you project your own image, then you are able to project the positive image. But when your enemy is your master, and when your enemy masters the press that's going to build, create this image and project it abroad, then naturally your enemy is going to project you in the image of a monster. Was asking me a few moments ago to either confirm or deny the statement that the Times had mentioned where I said we need a Mau Mau in the United States. I never would deny that. Why, we need more than a Mau Mau in the United States. I mean, actually, a person would have a lot of nerve to ask me that. In a society, I'm deviating now because they put me off the track. I got to deviate. In a society where in 1964, three civil rights workers can be murdered in cold blood, and the Mississippi government, the federal government, can't do anything about it, I say we need a Mau Mau.
Starts off with. Patterson is one of the main men. Ed Patterson is a brother who was snatched up from the streets of Chicago, taken to the infamous Area 2 Valley Grams, put out to California in May of 1986. He was tortured by then Lieutenant of Police, Lieutenant John Burge, and his elite team, who had a team. They consisted of such individuals as Joe Machine Gun Gorman, the same Joe Machine Gun Gorman that directly participated in assassination of Chairman Fred Armisen, the fiscal of Mark Clark. He was tortured with a number of other brothers, I'm sure sisters also, people like David Bates, Anthony Porter, Jack and Andrew Wilson, so many others. While he was being tortured in 1986, he was, again, while the torture was happening, I took a paper clip. Etched inside the wooden bench, about the young Sanders and the torch he was projected to. The Vietnamese community in Vietnam still speak about John Birch because he had took some attacks that he employed on the Vietnamese people from these tax attacks to the Windy City. He was a former tenant of Area 2 Valley Crimes thrown out of California. Again, he had previously implemented his torture attacks in Vietnam. And to this day, the Vietnamese people still speak it, with horror. About John Birch. So he brought these same tactics like placing black tack where the bags with men's head, stripping the neck, handcuffing radiators, dousing their bodies with water, electroshocking their sex organs. Patterson was one of those victims. While it was going down, Patterson was etching inside the wooden bench what was happening to him. He maintained his innocence. Even against all odds, when people say, well, you know, that can't be happening in Chicago, you know what I'm saying, that can't be going down. Later on down the road, I think about 7.5 years after Patterson was convicted, and they said, and they make the point this out, who all was involved in this. At the time, the president of Chicago, who was then a former state's attorney, Richard M. Day, who referred to his gangster name, was the state's attorney that prosecuted the case of Patterson, David Bates, and so many others, victims of John Birch. It was a connection. They went back about 7.5 years later, looked at the bench, and you still see the etching that Patterson spoke about that he laid in, they put inside the bench. What happened to him? He was subsequently sentenced to death. Patterson maintains his all during the strip, even though he's into the horrendous situations at places like Pontiac, Deathville, and other concentration camps in the state of Illinois. While being held captive, Patterson reached out to them with different organizations, POCC being one of those, in which he had put it plainly, said, Jared Frey, if you reach me on this case, I give you my word, I'm going to get out there and touch down with you, say, and aid and assist with the work that you're out there doing.
What is going on? Yes, Brother Aaron Patterson is one of the legendary victims of this barbarian John Bird. You've heard me talk about him before in my commentary, Cover Up Corruption and the Cops, the Lone Nut Theory and American Tradition. He is one of the psychopaths. Here's a clown, this punk cop, Bird, who got his training of torturing on Vietnamese people during the Vietnam War. And as Fred Jr. was talking about, he's such a good and legendary barbaric savage for the U.S. Empire in these methods that the Vietnamese people still talk about him today. Still today, he's known for his crimes against humanity. Once again, helps expose.
When you hear music after it's over,
the savagery
in the air,
that exists within this system. Now here you have Aaron. He was basically being tortured by all types of methods in Chicago by Burge. Electrodes, suffocation, beatdowns. And Patterson had enough wherewithal to not sign a confession that the police wrote up. And then he scribbled out underneath the table when they weren't looking, I lie about murders. He had that type of presence. He still gets convicted on a sham of a trial in 87. And he doesn't get out until January 10th, 2003. As soon as he gets out, he starts grinding legitimately for other people locked up in American gulags. This is why, once again, this helps expose how, you know, all this stuff going on in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib, this is nothing new under the sun, especially for black people. This is an everyday occurrence. As I've said before, America's just expanding out, is Negro-fying the whole world. So everyone's getting a taste, or at least a little bit of the taste, of what these savages do in the name of empire. But here, Fred Jr. describes with and what the POCC is connected with and how it's connected with Aaron Patterson. So let's check what Fred has to say.
POCC is an acronym for Prisoners of Conscience Committee. It's an organization that was literally birthed from our enemy lines. We say we are cut from the guts of America's intestines, you know what I'm saying? We say, Minister Huey P. Newton said that prison is a microcosm of the outside community, and we are not a prison activist organization. We are a revolutionary organization. We deal with our maternity wars with the Death Bills and the Angolas and the SCI Greens, you know what I'm saying? And there's our birth canals with the Angolas and medical corps are the chains, you know what I'm saying? Literally. That's the POCC. And when I made mattresses, free them all. That's how I call it, free them all. We talk about all, you know, free all political prisoners. So, that's just Brother Patterson. He reached out to the POCC. He can say, hey, you gonna aid us with the work that we're doing? He touched down with us. We took the campaign on. We took the every nook and cranny of the community. We had implemented with the POCC culture. We had several dead prayers concerts. You did forces like Common. They came in. We tied the case of Aaron Patterson in different concerts. Talked about the case of Aaron Patterson. Also, the streets with the code of conduct. You know what I'm saying? We do tie the case of Patterson in. Patterson had gained notoriety to a lot of different venues. And what maybe people be familiar with, I think it was January of 2001, when the former governor of Illinois, Governor George Ryan, had granted these pardons. And it was, let me be clear, it was just support of the people there. Patterson was one of those who was, almost released, but unleashed back on the streets. Patterson got back on the streets and took me to ground feet first, January 2001, literally dressed in prison guard, went right to anti-war protests. The day that Governor Ryan was set to give his speech at Northwestern University, when he was talking about giving this blanket commutation, giving the rest of the guys who were held captive life inside the camps, Patterson pushed the issue and said, no, we can't go for that. Patterson pushed the issue and pressed the issue with the former governor. We even changed the decision around that these forces, sentences were remanded for like 40 years and some of these cats are out due to Patterson's pushing the issue with Governor Ryan. From the video footage of these brothers was released. Yeah, a lot of brothers who came out and was saying, you know, you heard such statements as, well, I just want to thank God that I'm out and move forward with my life. Patterson stood out. So as soon as he came out through the door, he said, well, you know, let the record reflect on that black man going at the system, the same system that framed and snatched me up the streets. This is on film. He was committed and convinced. He came out again. He was true to his word. He touched down the POCC. He was an extraordinary example of the POCC, HTC, that being Harriet Tubman Code. In one case, he had the money the state schools gave him for restitution for him being held captive. $100,000. Patterson went back and bonded another individual, Nason Fields, who was on death over 18 years, who was sent to death by Judge Maloney, who was president, to serve 15 years in the federal court. This same judge is serving 15 years in the federal jails now for bribery charges. Patterson went back and bonded this brother, Nason Fields, out of jail.
In the air, you can never capture it again.
So once again, you can see that Patterson, it's an exceptional brother. Here he's been locked up all these years in prison. And all he gets is a measly $100,000. He actually tried to get $4 million for the wrongful commission. Several millions. And it was turned down. But when he gets out, he just hooks up with Fred and them at the Prisoners of Conscience Committee and starts working to help other cats who've been wrongly convicted and who are being brutalized. At that point, the reemergence of the conflict, of course, with the state begins. But here you can see the barbarity of the situation that we find ourselves in. But next, let's hear Fred Jr. go into the whole machine that exists in Chicago and how and what Daly and Company, from senior to junior, do as far as their brutal apparatus as mayors. Check it out.
Chicago is organizational capital, and everybody with names in Chicago. Chicago, the history of the gangster dating machine in particular, is a phenomenon that many people can't even fathom. Gangster Daly Sr., Richard J. Daly, present man's father, was head of such a Machiavellian machine that when Dr. King was set to come to Chicago, he had Negro preachers publicly, officially denounce King when he came to Chicago. And even the front, like you said, the facade is put forth about Chicago. King, had, when he came to Chicago, had later referred to it as Up South. That's what he referred to Chicago as Up South. And even if they had even commented how Machiavellian machine was able to, you know, pull certain, you know, stunts, you know, in regards to Dr. King's organizing. It's, again, it's able to put forth a front, you know what I'm saying, the so-called progressive. There's been a lot of hoopla in recent months about the state senate, Obama. It's a facade is put forward, and it's a class piece in this city. That's something that has not been officially challenged since there was a Black Panther Party of the 60s. And that's this time, this fast forward to right now, why Patterson has been targeted. Aaron Patterson possesses the potential to pop open a Pandora's box in the city of Chicago. I'm doing how deep it is, it's mind-blowing. There's a lot of discussion going on now about trucking scandal, the jobs, and so on and so forth. We need to talk about the body scandal, so that's going down. You have some forces, some quote-unquote leaders that go speak about what's going on, world issues. But if you have to ask logical questions, why don't they dare speak about what's going down on the fifth floor of City Hall in Chicago? Again, as a class piece, it's known, it's common knowledge about the Black Book, the gangster that keeps on the alderman in Chicago. Master Daly runs this slave ship that is known in Chicago through preachers, politicians, and gang chiefs. And again, back to this thing about Patterson. One case when Patterson was talking about organizing the press conference with the cameras inside the city of Chicago, representative of Channel 7 News had told me in Patterson, the mayor knew y'all was on your way, that's why he left from here. But again, it's a machine. And mark my words, it's a cat they working with now that's supposed to come from Israel, Hibbler, who was a key player in the Daly machine, who's playing a key role with designing the cameras, so on and so forth. And look for this guy, he's on the rise in Chicago, again, a key player in the Daly machine.
So you have a situation where, Fred Hampton Jr. was talking about, that here you have these guys with what they call the Black Book, which is essentially a hit book on radical political activists, you know, what have you. This is like being in Guatemala or something with little death squads running around. So Patterson gets out, starts trying to work for a legitimate cause, the masses of people, and he and Fred and company find themselves, of course, in the lion's den, or should I say, in the savage beast den. Now, this helps expose how we have to lose all illusion in dealing with these fools within the celebrity circle. Because in many ways, Chicago is supposed to be like a power center for many of the Negro elites. Think about it. Who's down there? Oprah. Her base is down in Chicago. That's where she lives. So she has the whole network in Chicago. You know, She's one of the most highly recognizable persons in the country, if not the world. You got Farrakhan. His base is Chicago. You go down to Chicago, see his restaurants and all of that type of stuff. Now, he's supposed to be, you know, a political, social, slash religious mover shaker. Jesse Jackson. His base is Chicago. He's supposed to be another titan, another icon, you know, from the civil rights movement. You have Michael Jordan, sports celebrity, one of the most highly recognizable personalities on the planet. Millions of dollars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And recently, as Fred Jr. just mentioned, that Obama, or whatever his name is, the senator, the Negro senator, he's, you know, out of Chicago. So here you have all of these major known international Negro players. What does it mean for the masses? Nothing. Nothing. I mean, you got Bird running around torturing people, him and his partners. And how is Burge dealt with in the end? John Burge? He's shipped off to retire in Florida, where he has a little catfish farm. Imagine. See, this is intentional. They're rewarding brutality. They're rewarding savagery because they have a war going on. A real war against us. So this also helps bring to light that, you know, this is this is not going to end in some kind of non-violent sign holding, you know, we are the world, we are the family type of situation. When you see what they're doing to us systematically, it may go under the radar quite often, at least for certain segments of the population. But this is something we have to deal with constantly. And when those of us try to raise our heads and rip back the slave chains that they've thrown on us and wrap it around their neck, their response is beyond vicious. So, once again, this also exposes the contradictions that the liberals get themselves in. Obviously, Chicago is a power base, if you believe power base within the, you know, Negro bourgeois type of structures. All these cats that I just mentioned have bases in the Democratic Party. They're all in Chicago. Obama, Jordan, Jesse Jackson, Farrakhan, Oprah. Now, all of this brutality is going on and has gone on for years within the Chicago prison and injustice system. What have they tried to do about it? What can they do about it? How have they intersected with black folks? Nada. I mean, this is the real world. This is why it's not on them. They're part of the problem. You have people who serve as diversions, you know, people, mystical diversions, athletic diversions, celebrity diversions, image diversions, you know, all this, you know, senator, high Negro place and high Negro face and high place. This is all posturing. But here, let's move on as Fred Jr. talks about the mayor's in Chicago's tactics of dumping folks out into the streets of Chicago. It's kind of like how the Zionists do to the Palestinians in Israel, Palestine, and the Islamic Zionists, you know, the Christopher Columbuses with turbans on and beards and hijabs do in the Sudan to their undesirable black population.
But they're still talking about Chicago, about the Meigs Field situation, airport, where there was a battle going on amongst gangsters between the Daily Machine and the Republican Party, we all going to rise, so on and so forth. They literally had construction trucks go down and tear up the landing field up for Meigs Field. Daily had it, the ground dug up at night. And it, to this day, it's, I mean, even other members of the ruling class, they can't understand the power that is put out, I mean, on this Daily Machine. So if he can do that to the land grab, the Chicago was known for the projects up now, which was, coincidentally, was a plan put together by Daly, the instrument by Daly Senior. They put tests on University of Chicago with rats on top of each other, see how they could create chaos and confusion. And they stacked these high-rises up and down State Street. This is known as Chicago 21. Chicago 21 plan was a key player was in with Daly Senior. We talk about Chicago was known as the most segregated city. This was a result of Chicago 21 plan. In a situation like the Woodlawn Experiment, how they got the Woodlawn property, you know what I'm saying? Daly played a key role with that. And fast forward to today, same type of phenomenon going down right now. With land grab is intensifying, and forces like Patterson or other organizations who form coalition with Bolt and other organizations were challenging this phenomenon, and that's why they came in with the past with all they had. There was a situation in February 2004, when Daly, along with the President U.S. Attorney General for Fitzgerald, were on a press conference in reference to what they refer to as the Safe Neighborhoods Act. We shut this press conference down. We got phone calls same time saying we are marked me and Brother Patterson.
So once again, you see what the hell is going on. You have all this type of dynamics that black folks are stressed under. The land grab and all of that. I mean, look, land and quote-unquote real estate, this is stuff that's, it's a game where property is being bought, rebought. It's been bought 100,000 times over in many areas and stuff. But relocating people out, using various forms to drive them out, when certain areas of the property are deemed valuable, or when people want to relocate certain epicenters in areas that are highly concentrated with the wrong type of people. So you use these various land grab methods and stuff like that. No respect for the human rights of these people. And you're already using brutalized state tactics in various ways. The prison industrial system, the terribly degraded school systems, et cetera, et cetera. Daly is a part of that. The Dalys have been a part of that apparatus. They push in this Safe Neighborhood Act, which is just another draconian attack on the rights of the people. And what you find is the real people with courage and respect for the victims of this brutality, cat like Fred Jr. and Patterson, and you know the cats in the prisoners committee. They're the ones doing all the effort to resist, educate, and deal with the crisis that we find ourselves in these areas. It's not Farrakhan. It's not Jackson. It's not Oprah. So this whole thing is just a sham. But it shows you the type of brutality that black folks are finding themselves in. The way that they set up, you know, all these high rises to stack people in, to overly concentrate so it's easier to control them. They're all on top of each other, don't have enough room to live, breathe, enough space. And then as events turned out, this particular real estate becomes valuable because of, you know, how scenes go back and forth. You know, one moment you have white flight out of urban cities, then you have white flight in the urban city, you know. And the value of the land is predicated deeply on whiteness. The more whites that come into an area, the artificially the value, quote unquote, of the land goes up based off of whiteness. This is how sick things are in America. Recently, a situation in North Oakland happened where this brother's been fighting against these little jive time drug dealers who really don't have any weight anymore because the crack era is on its major downslide, so they don't have the money and influence like they once did to, you know, work with the cops and, you know, pay them and, you know, do all that type of stuff and have their little chipmunks working for them and, you know, shoot grandmothers if the grandmothers want to get them out from doing what they're doing and stuff. Well, there's one cat in the North Oakland area. He's been in a conflict with a few of the little drug dealers for a while. And they've been doing their little threats and all of that type of stuff. And one of them, a little while ago, acted like he was going to kill him. Well, actually, he came to shoot him. But this cat was strapped himself. Now, he has no, he's not involved in any drugs or any of that. He just knew that the little knuckleheads were trying to act out. And they have autonomy when acting out on other black people. So it all comes down to defending yourself or die. So he defended himself, shot one of the little would-be Scarface Negroes, you know. So the police start coming after him. And the whole thing's a scam. Jerry Stonewall Jackson Brown and some other little sorry scumbag come down to talk to the cat about the situation, but somehow they can't get these little knuckleheads out of the area, even though everyone knows who they are. It's just a few of them playing their little Scarface role. You know, it's all a pathetic, bad script and joke. Yet at the same time, you have a situation where in this North Oakland area, the homes are skyrocketing, going up $400,000 or $500,000 for a home. Now, many of these homes in this North Oakland area, I mean, they're nothing special at all. And if you go back like 6-7 years ago, you could get one of those homes for, you know, like $110,000. Now all of a sudden, even in one of the articles, it had where it had over 20 people on the waiting list trying to buy this one little raggedy home that ended up going over $400,000. Some little home that just a few years ago was going for nothing. Now, how is it that all these white folks are now trying to, one, move into the particular area in North Oakland? Two, why do they feel safe in moving in? If, you know, if you have all this, quote-unquote, drug dealing going on, as the image is portrayed, why aren't they in fear of it? And why does this one particular brother and other black people seem to have all this conflict with the drug dealers, while the whites who are moving in, and by moving in, because of their whiteness, that land is going up? See, this is obviously something is being manipulated, and obviously there's some kind of coordination going on in this form of ethnic cleansing attempt, and it's the politically correct term is gentrification. But so that is part of a microcosm of what you see also going on in other urban areas, you know, in Chicago and so on and so forth. So you have black people dealing with that. At the same time, the police are waging a war in the name of fighting drugs, even though they're neck deep themselves, and fighting crime, even though there's certain crime that they don't mind, their own criminality, and the criminality by these little fake, you know, plastic Scarface Negroes trying to play on some of us. But here, Fred Jr. talks about how Aaron now gets locked up the same day that Verge is sent back to Chicago to face some of the barbarity that he had been involved in. So get this, Aaron, amongst a lot of other things that Aaron and Fred had been involved in, Aaron had always been committed to getting Burge back to Chicago to be reindicted on all this torturing he was doing, you know, bringing this, developing this electric generator that he developed in Vietnam, putting it to people's putting it to their ears and genitals, frying you up, all this traditional American values type stuff. So the same day that Burge is finally forced to scheduled to come back to Chicago, Aaron finds himself being arrested. Check it out.
This is when the federal government claimed this investigation was supposed to be launched, and we very clearly it was a daily machine that has launched Kane and Patterson in our practice, but theoretically, they say the federal government did. August of last year, Aaron Patterson was snatched up off the streets the same exact day that the groundbreaking, decision came down for Lieutenant John Burge to be brought back from Florida, where he was residing there, running a catfish farm, living in luxury. Patterson was pushing the issue for charges he brought against General John Burge. The city of Chicago was paying over $20 million+ for his defense. Burge's position was he had no responsibility to answer to the people. Patterson continuously pushed the issue. The same day the groundbreaking decision came down for Burge to be brought back to Chicago to answer his deposition about the torture that he engaged in. Half an hour later, Patterson is locked up on the Ford Heights Expressway, given trumped up charges. Attempted to purchase weapons and narcotics from an undercover informant. An informant who, by the federal government's own admission, Mario the Fox Madrano, who they say was a gang leader, they say was a known narcotic user and distributor, who they went inside the jail, state jail, got out, who they say was convicted for selling him $57,000 for crack, got him out of jail, paid him $6,500 cash, and phone records and phone documents show when they got him out, he did not go to his mother's house, his girlfriend. First thing he did was go at Patterson. Over 17+ calls, continuously calling Aaron Patterson. Tim said Aaron Patterson, no. What came out during the duration of the quote-unquote trial, which was really a legal lynching, Patterson, whenever he called his informant, Patterson would call the Chicago Tribune on Channel 7 News right before calling this known informant. They locked Patterson up in his trumped up charges. It was him and then he got two co-defendants, Mark Manning and Isaiah Kitchen. Both of the co-defendants were later given a bond. Patterson was denied a bond. They kept Patterson locked up. Two days before the statements were supposed to go down for the so-called trial, his co-defendant Isaiah Kitchen mysteriously died during the so-called trial. Patterson was literally beat up by fellow U.S. Marshals inside the courtroom. The same exact building where 38 years ago, then chairman of the Black Panther Party, Bobby Seale, was chained and gagged at. Presiding Judge Julius J. Hoffman. This time, Presiding Judge Rebecca Pallmeyer. In this courtroom, not only was Aaron Patterson not only chained and gagged, at some stage in the game, he was denied the right to even be inside the court. Beat him down inside the court, beat up member of the POC, she's 58 years old, beat her down in court, told her to get up, like, to be grabbing, get your black ass up in the court. July 5th, U.S. Marshals surrounded my mother. Told me they wanted to talk to her. I said, of course. She said, I can't speak to you. Let's have an attorney right here. They tried to take her picture. We get up there. They tried to hit me with a stun gun. We secured my mother. Got out of the court. Came back in. They told her my mother would not be allowed in the court no more. They told me I would not be allowed. I'll be arrested if I come back inside the court. Another David Bates was beat down. Two inside the turnstile. None of my supporters beat down inside the court building. This became the norm. And this is going on in some cases. Patterson was even denied the right thing to come to court.
All right, so once again, here's the urgency of this situation and, of course, the barbaric hypocrisy. You have a situation where Burge is forced to come back. Here you have Chicago putting up $20 million in his defense. Everyone knows that he's done it, that he's involved in a network of cops who are involved with it. I mean, this is not even disputable. This has all been brought out into the open years ago. This is why he had to retire and go off into the sunset. Yet they're still trying to defend him. Why? Because they want to maintain and show that if you're loyal to the empire, to the machine, the barbaric machine, that spends a crucial part of its time crushing the life, vitality, and soul out of black people, will defend you to the end. This is how it works. So they're spending $20 million on this criminal. They get this little informant. Now, we've been through all of this before, but this is why I say there's a crisis. See, they've always used informants to assassinate leaders and so on and so forth. Fred Hampton Sr., Fred Hampton Jr., the brother who's talking, his father, Fred Hampton Sr., was the leader of the Chicago chapter of the Black Panther Party. And December 4th, 1969, Fred Hampton Sr. and Mark Clark were assassinated late in the night at one of their apartments. How did this come about that the police were able to penetrate so easily? O'Neill. Sorry-ass O'Neill, an informant for the cops. This punk informant not only gave a blueprint to the cops of the locations of the various people and where Fred Hampton slept, so the cops knew just where to shoot up into the ceiling up to where Fred Hampton was, but O'Neill gave Fred Hampton some kind of spiked drink, some spiked Kool-Aid, so that he went out into a deep sleep. So the cops burst in, blast Mark Clark, who's sitting in front of the door with a gun, because they knew that these barbarians could come at him at any time. He gets shot right off. The cops start machine gunning the place up, using the blueprint of the map that O'Neill, the informant, gave them. They go to a specific location and shoot up. They hit Fred Hampton Sr. One of the cops, they go up there and say, well, he's hit, he's hurt, he's going to survive. Then there's a couple of more shots, which mean they basically shot him in the head, and then they you know, confirmed that he was good and dead now. Fred Hampton Jr. hadn't been born. His mother was pregnant at the time. They arrest her and put a gun on her, the whole bit, so on and so forth. So her umbilical cord to life to Fred was a true umbilical cord. The umbilical cord that the fetus Fred Hampton Jr. saw was the barrel of the Empire's gun as they pointed at her stomach. That's black people's umbilical cord to the state, the state's gun. Now, you have a situation where, in O'Neill helped terminate Fred Hampton Sr. and Mark Clark. Years later, Fred Hampton Jr. is still following in his father's footsteps and is still being tracked down by the beast, and finds the same type of informant game being played on him and other cats he's associated with. Now, going over to Geronimo Gijaja. Geronimo Gijaja gets framed up, spends 27 years in prison in L.A. He assumed leadership of the Panther chapter in L.A. after a priest, Bunchy Huggins, and partner were killed by some manipulation by the FBI. Now, who was, what helped solidify Geronimo's frame up? Another Sambo informant, Julius Butler, who testified that Geronimo told him that he killed these two people. Now, Geronimo happened to have been in Oakland at the time at a conference. And actually, the police and FBI had wiretapped conversations of him in Oakland at the time that the killing was going on in L.A. to prove it. Of course, they withheld the evidence. My point in mentioning this is that we know all about the way they use informants, because we've seen it used against our parents and uncles and aunts and all of that, you know, back in the day, in the 60s and 70s. So their tricks and stuff is not anything new. But it's used with such reckless abandon, and they're still able to get away with this type of sloppy fake evidence because we live in a society that's not concerned about any type of real justice. So here you see Aaron get framed up under this drug slash buying weapons charge. It's all fake. They get their a little informant who comes out. He immediately starts calling Patterson to try to create some artificial track records between him and Patterson so he can do his little informant game. This is what I mean by the crisis, because Oprah's down there, Obama, Jackson, Farrakhan, all of them are down there. What does it mean? We know what it means. You in prison. We have to deal with this. That's what it comes down to. Now, here Fred talks about Aaron Patterson's new ordeal in Sam's barbaric system. After the judge dismisses Aaron's attorney and puts in a questionable attorney to face as Aaron faces the drug and guns weapon charges. So check this out.
Aaron Patterson put forth, he represented himself. The judge position, they tried to take justice. Well, Patterson had to be insane and so on and so forth. And if the contradiction that she said he was competent enough to go to trial, but however, not competent enough to such represent himself. So Patterson was not going to be given a constitutional right to even be in his own court. So he was banned from the courtroom. And she had designated that Paul Calabans, who was later supposed to be tied to the HDO, which is the Hispanic Democratic Organization, which is a front organization that was that had been coming out of the Chicago Tribune, that was literally built by Davey. And also Tommy Brewer, who's guys on that mission, says he's a former FBI agent. I mean, you talk about a conflict of interest, to say the least. The government made it very clear that this was a legal mention. They had gave one case, they gave an individual David Bates a paper saying he cannot come back in the court on July 29th. They made it very clear this legal mention was signed and sealed and delivered, you know what I'm saying? One juror said point blank, they think all black people were members of gang. This is an open court, and they said they cannot be objective. Judge Rebecca Palmer said, no, you can't be objective, so on and so forth. They made it very clear. And there was a situation after I was banned from court where there was a physical altercation between Aaron Patterson and the designated attorneys. I mean, physical situation between him and these attorneys. When Patterson was telling them to ask put certain questions about Joe Gorman, remember that name, Joe Gorman. This had to be Joe Gorman Jr., on the stand, the son of the one that tortured and locked up past the first time, Joe Machine Gun Gorman Sr., it came out, he's on the stand. His son is the one that gathered all different agencies together and then hit up the investigation and locked Patterson up on this case. I mean, again, it's right with contradictions, I'm saying. In one case, Ann Patterson asked Judge Rebecca Pallmeyer, do you think it's a coincidence that you are the assigned judge to me and Governor Ryan's case? The judge literally froze on the stand. For the listeners that don't know, Illinois had a groundbreaking decision where he placed a moratorium on the death penalty. That's not a stop of the moratorium. Setting the stage now to reset the moratorium back up the death penalty. Ryan is set to go to trial after Patterson. Out of all the federal judges, this same judge, Rebecca Pallmeyer, was designated the case of Ann Patterson and Governor Ryan. And Patterson pointed this contradiction out. Do you think it's a coincidence?
All right, so Fred goes into a lot of stuff that I'm going to try to, break out. You have a situation where there was a moratorium on the death penalty. This was enacted by Governor George Ryan. In part, it got spurred by more people were being released after being proven innocent on death row than they could actually execute. And these people were primarily being found innocent, not by or within the justice system, but because in Chicago at Northwest University, a journalism class where a journalism professor actually has their students investigate particular cases and stuff and look into them and the contradictions. And these students, year after year, keep proving the innocence of these various people. And it got to be a national and international embarrassment. Now, let me weave in some of this dynamics. When he's talking about Daley, you have the legacy of the Daley Sr. that he was mentioning during the King days, who set up all the little apparatus to undermine King and the little Negroes, preachers to denounce King and all of that type of stuff. And the legacy goes on to Daley Jr. Today, who has taken the helm and is waging war on, continues to wage war on the masses of black people. Now, at the same time, one of Burge's sidekicks in barbarity and torture at the police station is Joe Gorman Sr. He was involved in some of the savage brutality against Aaron Patterson. So Patterson, of course, knows this guy and so on and so forth. Now, who ends up leading the investigation to frame up Aaron Patterson? Joe Gorman Jr. So Joe Gorman Sr.'s son has now taken the helm as part of the state apparatus to help crush black people like Patterson, in the same way that Daley Jr. is at the helm nowadays. Now, you have various similarities, like I was pointing out before about the informant game, where here you have a juror say that they believe that all black people are gang members. Obviously, this person is not fit to sit on a truly just jury system. But this is America, so that person is fine to sit on that, because their mentality and world vision of black people fits right in with the justice system, Justice America style, within the state. Now, this is not unlike what Mumia found himself in. When Mumia found a juror say and admit that he didn't think he could be partial. But Sable didn't find that a problem, because, well, after all, Sable was the one who said, I'm going to help you lynch this nigga, to one of the attorneys. So he didn't think he could be partial. But Sable didn't find that a problem, because, well, after all, Sable was the one who said, I'm going to help you lynch this nigga, to one of the attorneys. So Sable knew he wasn't going to be partial. So why should he worry about a jury being partial? This is America. justice, American style. So then Aaron Patterson gets into conflict with some of his attorneys because he sees the attorney that he had gets removed by the judge. In other words, that person was going to put up too much of a defense. They appoint the proper quote unquote attorney. Patterson already received beatdowns in court, a brutal beatdown. Now, what is that not unlike? Well, I would suggest people read the book Seize the Time, and you will find in Chicago a brother by the name of Bobby Seale, co-founder of the Black Panther Party here in Oakland, found himself being beat and gagged in the courtroom, the same courtroom that Patterson was getting beat down. It's all in the book Seize the Time. I would suggest you get it. So here you have a situation where that was then, this is now, but it's the same old thing in America's barbaric system. So Patterson, who spent 17 years in prison, 13 of them on death row, and doesn't get out of prison until 2003, and starts to fight for other people who've been wrongly convicted, finds himself in the grips of people within this barbaric system. He then finds conflict in this legal lynching situation where he gets a defense attorney, quote unquote, that he didn't call for. And it turns out that the altercations he's having with his defense attorney, who he thinks is not serving him properly, and the background of the defense attorney should give an indication why. This defense attorney is a former FBI guy. Now, Patterson has experience with these guys. This is some new type of co-op, psyops thing, where these guys are not just coming in and working as prosecutors anymore. They're working as defense attorneys. We ain't going for the okey-doke. But this is how things are played. This is the raw brutality that's going on now that we're facing. So you have a situation where after all of this madness, Fred updates us on Aaron Patterson's situation.
You got to announce to get the groundbreaking news that Patterson was convicted around 4:30 p.m. I was outside again, I was banned from the courtroom. Several FBI agents came downstairs, U.S. Marshals came downstairs smiling. They pointed to me and said, "You're next." And quote unquote coincidentally, they said, so Patterson was not in the court when the verdict came down. He has received a verdict through the grapevine. The president in isolation for being Aaron Patterson. One case exposed how the Metropolitan Correctional Center has dealt with working Muslims' food diet, just exposing so many contradictions and this going on right inside the jail. About the July 29th, verdict came down. They set a sentencing date. Now get this, they set a sentencing date for December 4th. December 4th, for those who don't know, it's National Revolutionary Day, the date in which the U.S. government assassinated Deputy Chairman Fred and Defense Counsel Mark Clark from Western Chicago. For those who are not clear, you know, so they got to make it clear, they're going to make it clear. Again, it's December 4th, and they moved from such a half hour away, negating the fact that December 4th is the falls on the sun.
All right, you see what's going on. Here they set the sentencing. Look. Aaron gets convicted off these fake, trumped-up, weak charges. They're ready to destroy his life. He's already spent 17 years within this barbaric prison system. That's not enough for them, of course. So he comes out swinging, fighting for a righteous cause. They use the same old raggedy informant slash bad defense lynch system. Don't allow him to have the defense that he wants to help solidify his crucifixion. He gets beat down in court. He ends up not being allowed to be in court while part of the trial's going on because of the conflict he sees going on and the contradictions he sees going on with his FBI defense team. So he's not even in court when the decision is read, in the same way that Mumia missed much of his trial because he was in conflict with the proceedings that were going on. But we're supposed to be the crazy ones, right? You know. So here, the raggedy U.S. Marshals come smiling out, pointing at Fred Jr., talking about he's next. Now, Fred Jr. has already spent 9 years in prison off some fake trumped-up charges about him throwing some, you know, incendiary device into a Korean store and trying to pretend that he's anti-Korean and stuff. I mean, it was all fake and everything. But Fred has already been framed up on trumped-up charges personally himself. So now Aaron gets framed up for the second go-around. This time the guns and drugs charges through this little jive time informant. They set the whole thing up, as Fred was saying, for the sentencing to be on December 4th. This is the same day that they assassinated Fred Hampton Sr., Fred Jr.'s father, and Mark Clark. They knew what they were doing, and as Fred mentioned, December 4th is on a Sunday. They don't have sentencing on Sundays. They were sending out a message. This is their message to us. This is their savage way of throwing it in our face, because they know that there's such a complacent society in general that's so apathetic towards the plight of black people. When you have a situation where over the last few months, a black man can be shot at 120 plus times, unarmed, in his car, bullets ricocheting and going through windows and through people's homes, outside of black folks, no outcry. That's the real world, Compton, California. A little kid could be stun gunned, 6 years old, no outcry. Florida. An 8-year-old girl could be handcuffed by cops, no outcry. Some kids in New York can be, in some cases, babies, 5 years old and under, can be tested and experimented on with DNA terminating drugs, even though many of the kids have no kind of illness whatsoever. This is some kind of Nazi experimentation that's going on with these little foster care kids. And without the knowledge, in many of the cases, of the guardian's consent. No outcry. Aaron Patterson gets framed up within the same context. What do you expect from the large majority of people within this population? No outcry from the raggedy liberals and progressives, you know, all that type of stuff, to the raggedy Negro fake consumer slash leadership. Jackson, Farrakhan, Obama, Oprah. It's all a scam, and it's up to us to deal with this. Now, next here, Fred talks about, essentially, the war on us. And how he's dedicated his life on being a consistent freedom fighter. Check it out.
We deal to be out. psychology. We did what Malcolm said. What Malcolm said, assess the death. Even if you don't fight back, Malcolm said, very plainly, you can lay down and walk all over you. His master, my straight now, they said, no, nigga, turn over. We deal with when we face such contradictions as this other day, within last week, they made another one of their quote on this so-called gang sweeps. They took up 19 brothers and sisters who they claimed were members of the Four Corner Hustlers. And when I was at that protest, one of the mothers of the young brothers, who I don't know, had walked up to me and said, are you Jeremy Fred? I said, yeah. I said, you have protest money at Palace? I said, yeah, that's right. She said, my son just got locked up the other day in this sweep over here, and they saying that he didn't sell drugs. They say he's facing 25 years from simply talking on the phone. They said, I mean, this is the type of contradiction that we're dealing with. So whatever guys or front they put forward for the wrong gangs, or back when they was taking Paul Wolfers and them so-called the commie scare or the McCarthy hands, well, whatever type of front they may be using this particular day and age, the reality is there's a war being waged on our people. And if you don't resist, if you don't fight back, I'm moved with a convinced position that I don't want to be counted amongst those people that just, but I see he turns more than me black. I don't want to be one of those people that take a position that Puff Combs says it's all independent of me. When I catch a case, all of a sudden, I want to do interviews with the final call. I won't be like Michael Jackson says, it doesn't make a difference if black or white. When I catch a case, all of a sudden, I say, they don't care about us. I won't be one of those individuals with Kobe Bryant would say, doing my thing on sports, so on and so forth. When I catch a case, all of a sudden, I'm quoting Dr. King. I won't let the man, when Malcolm said, if nothing else, that history resolved me. I'm talking about the record reflect that even when the sun is shining, when it's raining, I'm clear that I'm African, that I'm a victim of the system. So I want to be on a consistent basis, you know what I'm saying? That wouldn't just happen to me.
And he's right. Let history resolve us. And let our ammo and weapons help resolve some of our problems. Our ammo and weapons, physically and intellectually. This is a neutralization and extermination game plan that's going on. And all this Operation Cracker and all of this. Look, you have in Chicago, you've heard how they're waging war. In L.A., you have the Wayside Whiteys, Cavemen, the Vikings. These are police death squads. The Rampart Division explodes out. Over 100 people have to be released when exposed to the savagery and frame-up against the black, Latino, urban population. In Oakland, you have the Rioters, where they're running around massacring and taking people out deep into West Oakland streets, like on Wood Street and stuff, and doing all types of John Bird satanic type of acts on them. In Richmond, you have the Cowboys, another group of thugs, cowards, punks. In New York, you have breaking out from the Mullen case, cops involved in all types of brutality, torture. You had the Abner Louima case breakout, where they're sodomizing an individual. You have Amadou Diallo, 41 bullet style. Two of the cops attacked someone earlier that night. And for no reason at all. And both cats involved in the conflict with the cops realize that the cops are strung out on some kind of drugs, and recognize the cops later as being two of the assassins of Amadou. No outcry. It comes out later that Justin Velopi, one of the sodomizers of Abner, may have been one of these steroid head cops, you know, all strung out on steroids, jacking up on roids and stuff, all juiced out and stuff, to try to make themselves look intimidating while they're frying what little bitty minds that they have. No outcry. This is Death Squad stuff. I'm a dude get shot at by these four cops under this whole We Own the Night model that they had developed. It was part of a war on guns that Giuliani has set up, where they're supposed to get guns off the street. But of course, in the real world, this means get Negroes off the planet. Which is, as I've said before, why all these war on guns, war on drugs, war on crime, war on immigration, etc., etc., is just a platform for the state to have a war on us. This is how these states operate. So, this is the crisis we see ourselves in. And it's not going to be resolved with having illusions about anything other than our own resistance, however fierce it must be. Now here, Fred here talks about the urgency, as I was just mentioning, of the crisis that we find ourselves in.
But these revolutionary leaps are going to be smooth. The communities are going to have to be turned to classrooms. People have to, we got to move fast. We got to move organized. Cats got to get here quick. I'm talking about this abstract romanticism about the street or some sort of thing that they guess this is, that you live in some sort of bubble, vacuum. I'm just into hip hop. I'm just into the streets. I mean, the cats got to bring a whole different definition to keeping it real. I'm talking about, they got to, come to grips with some difficult realities. I'm talking about, you did this whole thing. I want to give a ghetto Grammy. I was due to track 8 on the last Ghetto Boys release, War and Peace. We don't talk to the police. Poetic type of way, you know what I'm saying? Because that's real contradictions out there in the streets. You dig? Just come to grips with some realities. I mean, not just the snitch factor. I'm talking about the Asian provocateurs. As we speak, they put, known Asian provocateurs. Around why, man? Casting work to me from the jail. Watch you be real careful, Chan. You know what I'm saying? Again, they, back to the case of Patterson, they went inside jail, got this individual, Mario the Fox Madrano, got him out, paid him $6,500, wired him up, like Radio Shack, you know what I'm saying? And came with an agenda to go get Patterson. These are not just bumping into you. They are sick, and it's known right now. They doing attacks right now. It's coming out now. The girlfriends of certain guys are locked up. They're telling them to go out there and look up other guys if they want to get their man out of jail. They are trying to produce a nation of similar to the British, but they did to China, to create a nation of dope fiends. The government right now is trying to produce a nation of stool pigeons, tricks, performance, the whole lick. You know what I'm saying? That's they trying to do that. And Ken's going to come to grips with a lot of realities. I'm talking about.
Now, it's clear that we just have to get ruthless on our stuff. This type of nonsense can't be tolerated. We have to draw the line in the sand. This extermination process, which is deeply part of the history that we find ourselves in this country and many other places around the world. Death squads raging in Sudan. Former death squads in Brazil. All of this nonsense, we have to resist. We have to resist and organize. And as Fred was talking about when he said abstract romanticism about the streets, that's that whole lumping in ideology. You know, where keeping it real means keeping it ignorant and keeping it self-destructive. No, that's just following the script from master. That's what you're doing. And if you call that real, then you're real silly. That's the real world. The crisis that this empire finds itself in itself, economically, its stability, is not that well. And its flexibility in how it could run its ship itself, because it will become more vulnerable economically, politically, so on and so forth, means that it's going to turn back in even more ruthless fashion on its population. Now, many people outside of our communities may not know or care how ruthlessly savage We find ourselves in our basic daily lives all the time. But we know, and we know that we need to do something about it. For our own existence is at stake. Let's put their existence, literally, at stake. Hold on a second.
expect me to vote for the lesser of two evils? Never. It's more like the evil of two lessers. That's like saying, M, choose your oppressor. Pick one, Jeffrey Dahmer, Hannibal Lecter. You want crack, coke, Pepsi, or Dr. Pepper? They all effed up, but neither one of them better. Because crack is like a Democrat, cocaine, Republican, marijuana, independent party, same government. You really think your vote count? Ask my folk down in Florida, didn't they straight throw they vote out? And the crackers act innocent, knowing they depend on this benefit from hush money from big businesses. Money is the president, dead prez, dollar bill, and I bet no convention ain't spending this. Soon they gon' need us, believe us. When did these cats pick rappers to be political leaders? Don't be pawns, be low leader LeBron's. Run up on them arm like mother, it's on. If Congress don't make progress, let's change the process. No more times running for office. Talking like that, these people will call you crazy. What's crazy is ain't no difference between me and Jay-Z. The same boat brought us the same place from slavery, so we rock the same chains anyway, baby, baby.
Existence. You can call Fred and other cats at the POCC by calling the number 773-250-7229 to help out what they're doing down there, and also with the Aaron Patterson situation, trying to get him out. And also, find out any other information that you feel you may need to. It's clear that, our golden rule, in a sense, is freedom and struggle. And when that is, accomplished, then only then can our existence, our lives, our well-being, and the planet that we are a part of will shine in the color of gold. Until the next time, slave revolt.